I thought I would just start quickly with a little map to kind of, I don't know if maps help anybody. It kind of helps me see things. And so we're kind of going to be focused, if you can, I don't know if my, right down in the blue, kind of in the middle of the Dead Sea there, Hebron. There it comes. Yeah, it's way behind me. Right in here. Let it. We're getting closer. Go. Yay! That's how far behind it is. This is the area of Hebron that's going to become very important as we go forward for reasons that we'll see. So what's happened is we saw that Saul and his sons went to war. They were killed. We kind of ended with the episode of how Saul had to commit suicide because he didn't want to be abused as an injured person by, you know, the Lord's enemies, and that a guy tried to ingratiate himself and say, oh, here's his crown and his bracelet that they wore up on their arms, that he thought bringing that to, we kind of see a reoccurring theme with that, with like, he thought bringing that to David would ingratiate him to David. But David seems to function on a different kind of mentality as far as that goes. He's very good about, and we'll constantly see examples of that in here, of not getting himself trapped in what we would call like earthly ascension. Like we see it in the houses in Europe and everywhere else where somebody kills the king and then they take over and then they have to kill all the king. And we'll see it eventually creep into Israel too. But at this point, David is trying to do, it seems like, a good job of avoiding that. And so that's kind of, we'll kind of pick it up. We kind of ended with David, when he learns of Saul's death, he kills the guy that thinks he's going to ingratiate himself. Or he doesn't kill him. He has other people do it, which is always a nice. But the other side of that is, so now David's going to try to unite the kingdom. So as you can see, when he was raiding the people that were raiding Israel for the enemies of God, he was secretly sending stuff back to Israel, which was a nice, smart thing to do because he ingratiated himself, you know, with those people. So then we kind of ended, he ended with this song, he praised Saul, and it's kind of interesting because, not that you can carry it too far, but throughout the Bible, David's pictured as a type of Christ. And I thought it was really kind of neat that Saul was horrible with David. Just wouldn't leave him alone, just threat. But in the end, David sang these songs of praises of Saul, just the way the Lord sees you. He knows all the things you do wrong. He knew the things that I thought this morning when I looked at the newspaper and the things like that. And he didn't see that. He forgives me. He looks down at me and he sees his son. And he just knows I'm forgiven. And he sings praises over me. And that's the way David did with Saul, him and Jonathan. So just to give a background without going all the way back through all that, it was kind of, if you go back, so we got through 1 Samuel chapter 1, which was kind of the reading. And I wanted to go back and grab this map so we kind of know where we are. There we go. Come on. Oh, now we got to go back. Boop. All right. After this, there's a certain time of mourning that was given for. And you got to remember how close David was to his to Jonathan. So also kind of overlooked in that is the fact that Jonathan died with Saul, and that really probably had to hurt David grievously. So he took his time to mourn. And then it says, after this, David inquired of the Lord, shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said to him, go up. David said, to which shall I go up? And he said, to Hebron. So that's why I showed you that map and kind of pointed out. That's kind of, it's a very centralized location in the country. I don't know if that has any kind of part. We know eventually, it's not far from Jerusalem, and Jerusalem will eventually become the city of David and kind of the capital. So the Lord sends him to Hebron. So David went up there, and his two wives also, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David brought up his men who were with him, everyone with his household, and they lived in the towns of Hebron. So, if you remember, David had about 600 men that were like this merry band of, you know, kind of picture them as the Robin Hood and the, you know, the Sherwood Forest gang, and they've kind of stuck with him through thick and thin, so he makes sure that they're taken care of. And also probably a smart thing to do is keep the people that have been with you very, very close to you and around you, because we're going to see an interesting, I'm going to try to make a point. So David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to him, may you be blessed by the Lord because you showed disloyalty to Saul your Lord and buried him. Now may the Lord show steadfast love and faithfulness to you, and I will do good to you because you have done this thing. So basically they're the ones that went up, and if you'll remember, they nailed Saul. They still took Saul's body and nailed it to the wall of the city. And these guys were brave enough to go up and get his body, and they burned it real quick and buried him so he couldn't be humiliated, you know, as he was the king. And it was a humiliation of him and Israel. So David's, like, giving them props for what they went up and did. Now, therefore, let your hands be strong and be valiant, for Saul, your Lord, is dead, and the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. So, you know, David's kind of gently trying to ingratiate himself here and say, hey, look, I know Saul was your guy, and but now he's gone, and the Lord has made me king. You know, you kind of get the feeling reading through here, you'll see as we get into these first couple, it's this weird transitional phase, that people... Sometimes it's never mentioned that anybody knew that Samuel anointed David, like, other than David knew. But then other times, people confess and say, I know the Lord has anointed you king over Israel. So it's weird. It's never really pronounced. So I don't know how, if the word just got out and some people believed it, some people didn't, or... You know, did more people witness it or hear about it than we really know? It'll come to play a part in what's going to happen in the future. So here's a little bit of the intrigue. But Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Ahish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim and made him king over Gilead, and the Asherites, and Jezreel, and Ephraim, and Benjamin, and all Israel. So, not sure, you know, you can't, doesn't give you the reasoning for him doing this. Is he just trying to hold on to his position? You know, is this a completely... ambitious thing where he, you know, he's in charge of the army. Now David comes in, takes over and be the king, like we were just talking about, his 600 guys that have been around him the whole time are, you know, is he going to appoint one of them head of the army? And this is, you know, I'm sorry, I hope I brought it. Did I shove her book in my book bag? Or was it on the
account? No worries.
Well, what I was going to tell you, so Ann had given me a book, so I put forth the premise that I think as a picture of Christ, that David was abused by his brothers. Not, but just ignored. There seems to be evidence that David was the youngest son from another mother, you know, like we say that now, that they were like ignoring him. That's why he was out in the field. They were basically saying, you're not getting any inheritance. Don't you be. And it's interesting because I didn't get it, but I assume the premise of the book was that they were saying that no, that might not be true, that David was this. But I kind of see, I was trying to dwell on this, and you see this point where all throughout this, it's these people play on these family relationships. I mean, it was very, very important in their culture. Like, your family was, you know, blood thicker than water, definitely. But
that's because they don't understand that statement.
Yeah. So this seems to be a recurring. So if you see this, is, you know, this guy's trying to keep one of Saul's sons on the throne because he has a stake in it. And I was just thinking with that book, like, we never, and I'm a couple chapters ahead trying to read, and David's family's never mentioned. They never come to his aid. It never talks about, like, when he was. Now, maybe Saul had people watching them, and they were like, well, we're not going to try to reach out to David because we'll get on Saul's bad side. Or, for some reason, David's family really never seems to, and I mean that in his brothers, because his father's name's Jesse, David's son of Jesse, kind of thing. But I thought it's really, really interesting to me, and I was thinking about that. I have kind of a weird family history, too. And I always thought that I was going to try to, like, bring my family where it, like, started with me. That, you know, my sons would relate to me, they're my grandson, my granddaughter. Like, we would know our line. I would try to keep it as, although it's not in your control very much, as least amount of corruption in that, you know, line. I was talking with Karen. We were talking about, I know during, like, our post-World War II, a lot of times fathers, you know, and you don't know what had happened after the war and what happened, but a lot of times fathers were given, I knew growing up in the 60s, which I didn't realize how close it was to World War II compared to now, that, like, a lot of parents in our neighborhood were given a lot of leeway. Like, there were some pretty bad fathers, but they were always given this pass that, well, he went to work and he earned for his, he earned his keep, which, that is like the basic premise of fatherhood. You know, you're a really low-life person if you don't at least meet that bar. But just to be able to say, I go to work, I bring home the money, I put it on the table, and then leave me alone, that's not the example of the father that I think that God meant for you to be for your family. That there's a lot more to pour into your sons and daughters than to just throw money at them and call it, you know, fatherhood that I'm doing. And, you know, David's kind of makes me think about, but I also think with David, it's kind of interesting because then I was like up in the New Testament and I remember the blind man calling out, he says, Jesus, son of David. Jesse's never, and I think God made it a point to start. David had a lineage. I mean, obviously he's a human. He had, you know, a father and a mother and all that. But God seems for his purposes to start with David. It's never Jesus, son of David, son of Jesse. Jesse's never really David, the rest of his lineage and his family. So on one hand, we look at this and think that David kind of got, for lack of a better term, ripped off, and that his family didn't really family him like you would think they would have. But on the other hand, he had a better father that was with him, you know, through thick and thin. And when David, you know, the other point, you know, we always point out that it's nice that God calls David a man after his own heart when you see that, you know, he just made bad decisions. He made many, many, many bad decisions that came back, got people killed. I mean, he committed murder himself. He got people killed when he went to the priest and lied to him to get some food. I mean, throughout his career, he you know, one time he had to act like a crazy person to ingratiate himself with the king. And just so every time David does this, for lack of a better term, this fleshly, makes these fleshly human decisions, and it's going to come back and bite him, that it's the Lord that steps in and rescues him. And I just, it just feels comforting to me that I know some people are very, very close to, I, you know, was close to some of my family, that even if you don't have, you can't reach back any further in your ancestry than you, because it's a mess. The Lord's willing to work from that point on. You know? He's like, well, he's basically saying, you know, Anne, daughter of Jesus. That's the lineage that God looks at. So no matter what your, this is kind of hope for everybody that has that messed up family life, that he's willing to start with you, and he can make a lineage from you and start with you. And I just think that's really, really cool. I don't know why that kind of spoke to my heart as I was reading. Because you're always seeing, we saw before that the son of so-and-so and his brother were chasing Abner, and he turned around and stabbed him, so the brother was going to kill him. And finally they just said, can we just stop this, or there's going to be war forever, perpetually. And somebody was smart enough to say, but families always seem to step into the breach, and David never really had that for as far as his earthly family. So, you know, and maybe with that comes some intrigue and stuff, that if you have people that are drawn to you because they love you and are like you, just like you are, that maybe that's better than just this people that are only with you because they can gain something because you're in their family and they're going to profit from that. So, I don't know. It was something I didn't get into your book, so that was terrible.
Well, let me give this 2-minute book review. So this book is called Misfits of the King. I got some Tammy for Christmas from the Little White Elephant thing. And in there, it had reference to a book, which I don't know what it is, but it'd be like, you know, historical documents. And so since Jesse and his wife, and I can't remember at this moment, you know, were ancestors of Rahab and Jephthah, what is it? Not Obed. Obed is fun. Ruth, Mary, Boaz. So since they were like from that, you know, scandalous lineage kind of thing, after Jesse had several sons with his wife, then he had like taunting rumors around town kind of thing. So he didn't want to have any more children and kind of put his wife away and didn't have relations with her anymore. And then he got the bright idea to have a child with her maidservant. But her maidservant loved her and knew that her heart ached to have more. And so on the night that Jesse went to sleep with the maidservant, they got the bright idea, like Leah and Rachel, let's switch places. So then Jesse slept with his real wife, conceived, but then the rumors were she had an affair with somebody, but she really had an affair with her husband. Had this baby, David, but then he was always the black sheep, which is why he was out tending the sheep. So when Jesse was asked, bring me your sons by Samuel to me to have a blessing over him, he didn't even consider David to be one of his sons to be chosen by the Lord. So anyhow, I just thought it was very interesting because, like, God knows the details, but doesn't see fit and, like, for us to have the details. But when you read the Psalms, David is, like, always the one to be blamed, always the black sheep, always, you know, pushed basically to the bosom of the Lord to be a worshiper out with the sheep, and so he sees all that we have for him. So I had Chris kind of read it to get his input. You can still read it if you hadn't read it. But anyhow, it was just interesting because you see a lot of that, like you said, it's like God the Father was his father.
Yeah.
The real one.
And I guess hope for everybody that has a screwed up family line that, you know.
We're all misfits of the king.
Yeah, we're all misfits of the king. And you have a father that loves you and you have the perfect lineage. You are Rose, daughter of Jesus. And what could be better than that, you know?
God has something.
So it has something to do with Deuteronomy to the third and fourth generation, but those who love me for a thousand generations, because David's the fourth generation of Boaz.
Right.
No.
Yeah, right. There's a
the verse says,
since of the father and the children to the third and fourth generation, but to those who love me a thousand generations.
So basically, you're going back to David because that's when it all started again.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it starts with David because it's a new thing.
Yeah. It's just like he couldn't inherit land for 10. If you were an illegitimate child, your descendants could not. If you were out of Israel, since they illegitimate, and this goes back to Ruth and Boaz, when children could not inherit land for 10 generations, but David was the 10th generation from that. So if anybody before him couldn't have inherited land anyway, so under the law, so David's the one when it was time. And that gets into the whole thing when you think about when Saul was anointed. Like, God knew that he had a guy already over here in the wings waiting, but okay, you want this? I'm going to give you this. Enjoy this. And all the crazy things that Saul did. So, we're back. So he basically, you know, Abner makes one of Saul's sons king and says Ish-bosheth, son of Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel. And he reigned for 2 years, but the house of Judah followed David. So it's kind of, we've seen little hints of this, that you can see that there is some editing post split for the kingdom when they're, a couple times in here it's talked about the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah, and this is kind of one of those, this will play out over time. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ishbosheth, son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. And Joab, the son of Jerusalem, and the servants of David, went out to meet them at the pool of Gibeon. They sat down on one side of the pool and the other side of the pool. We kind of went through this, I think, before, didn't we? I wonder how I got back to that one. Sorry. That basically when they were...
They grabbed each other and killed each other.
They all killed each other and everything. So
it's been 3 weeks. We all forgot.
So we'll move on to 2 Samuel 3. Sorry, that was a little my backtracking. So basically, comes down. There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew stronger and stronger, while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker. The other thing I was thinking of is, like, as Christians, and this is the way I played out these books in my mind real quickly when we were doing this, is we kind of have a tendency to think that if this doesn't happen smoothly, if we feel like the Lord's leading us in a direction, the minute we get some kind of resistance, sometimes we're like, oh, that door's shut. We're going to some... You know, sometimes God wants to exercise your spiritual muscles. And if anybody's ever worked out, you know how you build muscles is you lift weights until you can't lift them anymore. Then you have to stop. And when you stop, your body starts healing. And it heals. You've broken those muscles to the point that when you're resting, those muscles are being built back. And they're actually being built back stronger than they originally were. So the point is that you keep it up over time. You put more and more weights on, or however you do it, you gain strength from that. And I think sometimes we just want everything to be so easy and so, like, if the Lord's in it, it's going to be like, you know, ice skating on butter. It's going to be fine. And sometimes, you know, we have an opposer. We have an enemy. And he's going to throw things, and God wants to exercise your spiritual muscles a little bit. He wants you to push against that sometimes, I think. And you know, come to him, question. It's okay, this ain't working out. Why? I was, you know, you were pointing me in this direction, and it's not working out the way I thought. And sometimes the way we think it should work out, I don't believe is the way that it was meant to work out. And again, God wants you to exercise those spiritual muscles and wants you to push through those places where And again, discernment comes in. I won't mention the guy's name, but I happen to be looking at a news story, and a famous TV preacher, they showed the mansion the guy lives in and the airport and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't think Jesus really meant for, you know, real true men of God to be living in, you know, these mansions with, you know, gold-plated toilets and... Yeah. So it was just, it's just disheartening sometimes. So, you know, there's guys that have easy paths. You know, you got your little easy path you put up in the your spiritual windshield, and they're getting rich off of the kingdom. And I've done a lot of things wrong in my life, but I don't want to stand before God and face that one. You know, that has to be a really, when you fleece the flock and stand before Jesus, I don't want to be that guy. But I will take donations if you're ready.
Flogging?
Flogging, yeah. All right. And the sons born to David at Hebron, his firstborn was Amnon of Anahim of Jezreel, and his second, Chileb of Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel, and the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Tamar, king of Geshur. So I was kind of going through this. We kind of, if anybody's read kind of through this, we know what's going to become of Absalom. And so it's kind of interesting that, like the first two we saw through the scriptures, this third one, this is another place where it looks like David stepped into his flesh, because this is how, back in those days, how you cemented a relationship with another kingdom. With God, or God, the king of that kingdom, or you, depending on which side of the category you were on, would offer his daughter in marriage, and that would bind the two kingdoms together, because now you have, you know, a royal line from this kingdom that's intertwined with a royal line of this kingdom. So in earthly terms, you're now bound together. But God completely forbid that when he was laying down the rules for what a king should do. He's like, you don't have to make any treaties. I've got you. You, if you will listen to me, obey my commandments, you don't have to make treaties with the people around you. Well, it looks like David ended up with Maacah, the daughter of Talmah, king of Geshur. Can't say for certain it is, but it looks like that's what this kind of, and this is going to come back to bite him in his hindquarters once again, as many things in his life does. Alright, and the fourth son, Adonai, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Stephani, the son of Abital, and the sixth was Ethraim of Elgad, David's wife. And these were born to David in Hebron. And I didn't go through and do the things for father names, because I'll do that later on as they become more prominent. You can kind of pick out each one as when we get through their history and what their name kind of means and what it was. So verse 6, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. So again, it goes back to this guy that was the leader of Saul's army. You get the feeling that this guy Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, was kind of a patsy. I can't prove that, but it seems to be this guy's basically pulling him around by his nose and telling him, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do. And he's like, okay, okay, okay. And as he's doing this, the general's actually becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. So he's pretty much consolidating his power. So, and then this is going to be an interesting thing. So now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Ahiah, and Ish-bosheth said to Abner, why have you gone into my father's concubine? Then Abner was very angry over the words of Ish-bosheth and said, am I a dog's head of Judah? To this day I keep showing steadfast love to the house of Saul your father, to his brothers, to his friends, and have not given you into the hand of David, and yet you charge me today with the fault of concerning a woman. So I actually did some research on this, and you can find all kinds of... first off, so basically what happened is the son of Saul, who's now the king, is accusing the head of the army of going into one of Saul's former concubines. Again, we remember that that always, the minute you see the word concubine, it's, there's problems. That was basically kind of a wife that didn't have any of the benefits of being a wife. She didn't get to inherit land, all this kind of stuff. So there's some different view, but the Bible, I guess the best thing I found was the Bible never tells you whether he did this act or not. It doesn't seem that it's important, but he is very, very hurt by this. And you don't know if one of the theories was that because he was gaining all this power and consolidating, this was this guy, this kid, I call him a kid, he's 40-some years old, Ish-bosheth's attempt to kind of bring him down a peg or two, but he basically accused him of treason, is what it is, to go in and sleep, even if with the ex-king's concubine, was a treasonous act. And you can kind of see, I personally believe that God was behind the scenes of all this, kind of bringing this about. So obviously, so he was very, very angry over these words. So either you could believe the theory that he was angry because he was caught, or he was angry because he was being accused maliciously that he never did this. And there's all, you can, I mean, every verse in the Bible has some kind of rabbinical tales tied to it that you could see. If you go in and research it, the ancient priests or the priest and so-and-so believe this is what happened. And I more fall on, I think if God wanted you to know, he would have told you. He would have said, and Abner went into Saul's concubine. He kind of doesn't tell you if it's true or not, so it's not important to him. So Abner was very angry of the words of Ish-bosheth, said, I am my dog's head of Judah. To this day I keep showing steadfast love to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers, to his friends, and have not given you into the hand of David, yet you charge me with this fault concerning a woman. God do so to Abner and more also, if I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has sworn to him. So I think it's kind of interesting that this guy, throughout the history of this, who does he admit he's been fighting against? God. He says, because I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has sworn to him. So this goes back to my original, when we were talking at the beginning this morning, when I said, you kind of never know who knew that Samuel really anointed David. You don't know. I mean, obviously his brothers knew, but they never seemed to get involved in anything. And, you know, obviously Samuel knew. He's dead. He got called back for a minute, but he's gone. So you don't, but these, right here, he admits that people know that David's supposed to be the king. And again, just like Saul, they're still kicking against the goat of God, you know. But again, I think it's kind of, I get the impression that God's stretching David's spiritual muscles through all this. Like I said, you would read the book, and I first said, you know, okay, 1 Samuel is going to be all about Saul. We're going to go into 2 Samuel, and it's going to be about David. Well, there's these chapters, and there's this transition period that this is a long, drawn-out endeavor. It's not just clean-cut of you. Okay, so that David got anointed. Let's make him king. A lot of people had a vested interest in, you know, Saul being king and how they were benefiting from that, and they weren't going to give that up so easily. So, it says, and David, what the Lord has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan to Beersheba. So this is pretty much, he's admitting that God made David king over the whole land of Israel. So, or land we consider Israel now. So it's kind of interesting that he was fighting against God this whole time. I knew it. So, and Ishbosheth could not answer Abner another word because he feared him. That's what made me think he was kind of a patsy in all this. That this guy's the real. This guy's out on the battlefield swinging swords while this guy's in the back in the tent going, "Are we winning? Are we winning?" That kind of thing. So, but for whatever reason, he did this. I don't think it turned out quite the way he had planned on it. So Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, "To whom does the land belong? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you and bring over all Israel to you." So this is, so he's obviously deeply offended by this, and now he's completely switched sides. He's going to like, "Hey, not only am I going to come over to you, I'm going to bring everybody with me. I'm going to tell them what an idiot this kid is, this guy is, and they're all going to come with me." And he said, "Good." David obviously is responding. He said, "Good, I will make a covenant with you. But one thing I require of you, that is, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face." So, that's going to get into an interesting. Then David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, "Give me my wife Michal, for whom I paid the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines." Which is kind of interesting, because if you remember the story, it's really 200. So, and Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband Paltiel, the son of Lachish, but her husband went with her, weeping after her all the way to Bahurim. Then Abner said to him, "Go, return," and he returned. Again, so I'm like, why is David, of all the things he's worried about in the world, why is he worried about getting this girl back? Well, this is part of his, to be honest with you, this is part of his claim to the throne, mm-hmm. is having Saul's daughter, made him a prince in the court, and then he would have direct. This would give him to the rest of the kingdom that human right to the throne, as opposed to people just saying, "Samuel anointed him, so he should be king." This gives him the physical. So again, without this.
There's also from Samuel, when Saul was turned over to David in 24, I think it's the cutting the root. And Saul said, "Now I know for sure the king is your king." And that's when he makes him promise to take care of the family too. Like, treat my descendants well.
Right.
So David's walking, you know, with the promise that he made to Saul. When Saul acknowledged him as king,
one of his
people that
were fought. Right. And we're going to see that play out with one of Jonathan's sons also. But, so it's funny, you can go back and again, you can find rabbinical scholars on it. The story is that this guy, Patel, the son of Lachish, took her as his wife, but they never consummated the marriage, because he knew if he did that, they would be committing adultery. Again, this is, I have no proof of this, just going out and doing this research. But then the rabbinical story is, although that didn't happen, they became very, very close in their relationship, which is obvious that he, you know, crying all the way from, it doesn't tell you how far he went. So at some point, the leader of the army had to come in and said, "Suck it up, buttercup, go home." You know? And so he was very, very, but it says that, so she had never been with another man other than David, is the rabbinical theory, that because this guy evidently was a pretty righteous man, and he knew she had been somebody else's wife, that if he consummated that wedding, that or consummated that marriage, that he would have been, they would have been committing adultery. So they never did. So it's a pretty interesting story because, like, I was like, this is a lot of trouble to go through over somebody. But you'll remember the last time he saw her, she saved his life. She got him out of, she used her idols and got him out of the house and kept him from the king. So Abner conferred with the elders of Israel, saying, "For some time past you have been seeking David as king over you. Now then, bring it about, for the Lord has promised David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all their enemies.' Abner also spoke to Benjamin, and then Abner went to tell David at Hebron all the house of Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do." So this guy's pretty sharp. He goes and gets everybody on board and says, "Hey, this guy's kind of a knucklehead. We've been trying, but he's not going to get any better. David's the right guy. He's going to help us defeat the Philistines." So, you know, he obviously goes to these other tribes and stuff and says, "Come on board." When Abner came with 20 men to David at Hebron, David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. And Abner said to David, "I will arise and go and will gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you and that you may reign over all that your heart desires." So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Just then the servants of David arrived with Joab from a raid, bringing much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away and he had gone in peace. Then Joab and all the army who was with him came and was told, "Joab, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has let him go, and he has gone in peace." Then Joab went to the king and said, "What have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why is it that you have sent him away so that he is gone? You know that Abner, son of Ner, came to deceive you. You're going out, you're coming in, and he knows what you're doing." Basically, he's accusing, he's saying, "You can't trust this guy. He just basically came here to spy, to find out, you know, how many people you got, what the layout of your land is."
But that's also Abner's MO.
Right.
Because he gives the rose to Saul's son, but where was he when Saul died?
Right.
What was his position? Where was he? So you have, and give, now he's doing the same thing to David, giving David the rose and turning on Saul's son.
And there's times
and
that
you have this track of eventually what's going to happen if it's between David and somebody else and Abner's going to favor better on the other side. So,
and plus the times that David snuck up on Saul and cut his head, it was always Abner. Was never like, "Where you sleeping, dude?"
Then he took his spear.
Yeah,
so that's when he got it.
Mm-hmm. So we're almost. I'll try to get through this there. So when Joab came out from David's presence, he went, sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the cistern of Sirah. But David did not know about it. And when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside to the midst of the gate to speak with him privately, and there he struck him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. So, and afterward, when David heard of this, he said, "I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord of the blood Abner, son of Ner." Because David swore peace to him. David said, "I'm good with it. Whatever, if you're being deceitful, whatever you're doing, we have a covenant. I will, I'm letting you go in peace." And obviously,
you know that it's interesting. Hebron is a city of refuge.
Mm-hmm.
And Abner killed the brother. So technically, if he went there,
he was
he
would
have never left.
Right. He would have been covered to the priest.
But he also killed him in war.
Yeah, but that. But I'm just saying, it gave Joab the right, per se, for the manslayer, because he wasn't in the city, he could kill him.
But that's for cold-blooded.
So
I can't, but it's kind of interesting.
And you could also make the case, it's kind of funny that he did it in the midst of the gate, that he'd like get him just outside the gate, where it's no longer... Right. So we'll kind of end there. That's a pretty cool place that everybody can, like, have their opinion about what happened. But obviously, David makes it a point to know that, hey, I let this guy go in peace. Lord, don't put his blood on my hands. I didn't, you know, I swore peace to him and I was letting him go. So we're going to see this play out as it goes through the history of here. So somebody remember verse that we ended on, verse 28, and we'll pick it up next week. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Sorry it was a little weird getting started because I've been away from it for a while. Somebody want to end this in prayer?